Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 13, Text Number 38. Iti sanchintya dashara vatsan savyasan api sarvan achasta vaikuntham chakshusha vayunena Saha. Iti sanchintya dasharo. Vatsansa vayasanapi. Sarvanna chasta vaikuntam. Chakshusha vayunena saha. Iti sanchintya dasharo vatsansa vayasannapi sarvanna chasta vaikuntam chakshusha vayunena saha Iti sanchintya dasharo vatsansa vayasannapi Sarvanna chasta vaikuntam Chakshusha vayumena sa. That's vayunena sa, sorry. Chakshusha vayunena sa. Please. Ladies, please. Tisan chintya dasharu.
synonyms. Iti sanchintya, thinking in this way. Sorry. Dashaha. Baladev. Vatsan. The calves. Sa Vayasan. Along with his companions. Api. Also. Sarvan. All. Achashta. Saw. Vaikuntham. As Sri Krishna only. Chakshusha. Vayunena. With the eye of transcendental knowledge. Saha. He, Baladev. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada Ki. Pardon me. Thinking in this way, Lord Balaram was able to see with the eye of transcendental knowledge that all these calves and Krishna's friends were expansions of the form of Sri Krishna. Purport. Now let's do it together. Thinking in this way, Lord Balaram was able to see with the eye of transcendental knowledge that all these calves and Krishna's friends were expansions of the form of Sri Krishna. Purport. Every individual is different. There are even differences between twin brothers. Yet when Krishna expanded himself as the boys and calves, each boy and each calf appeared in its own original feature, with the same individual way of acting, the same tendencies, the same color, the same dress, and so on. For Krishna manifested himself with all these differences. This was Krishna's opulence. Iti sanchintya darsharo vatsan savaya sanapi sarvana chasta vaikuntam chakshusha vayunena saha. So this very fascinating pastime continues, and it gets more fascinating as it goes on. It's very interesting, and I'm sure many have questioned this, as to why Lord Balaram who's Vishnu Tattva, who's omniscient, knows everything, was not able to know this for almost 2 years. Actually, we're 5 or 6 days before the actual year is up, according to the purport. So up to this point in time, Balaram, he had suspicions that this was not normal. There was so much love going on. The cowherd men and cowherd women were loving their children as never before, with such intensity, with such fervor. And the cows were loving their little calves with such fervor, with such intensity. What's going on here? Something's not normal, he's thinking. What could it be? Now, if he's omniscient, he should be able to know what it is, because Krishna is omniscient and he knows everything. And therefore, Baladev is also, he's an expansion, first expansion of Krishna. He should know also, but he doesn't know. And why doesn't he know? Simply because Krishna doesn't want him to know. Krishna is all-powerful. Krishna is all-knowing. Krishna is in charge. Krishnastu Bhagavan Svayam. Krishna is the original personality of Godhead. From him, all the other expansions come. So he can decide what his expansion should or should not have or know. Because we call Krishna the supreme personality of Godhead. Supreme means highest. Balaram is also referred to as the supreme personality of Godhead, and generally that's the truth. But if Krishna doesn't want him to know something, because Krishna is the supreme, supreme, supreme personality of Godhead, then Balaram is not going to know it, for whatever purpose Krishna had. If I had to guess, well, I couldn't find in the Shastra the actual reason Krishna kept it a secret. But if I had to guess, I would say that sometimes it's better to keep a secret, and it plays out much better. What you want to accomplish works out much better than when you reveal it to others. Sometimes there are interruptions, there are interventions. Persons reveal the secret to other persons who should not be revealed. So Krishna wanted to keep this a complete secret, and no one knew it. Although Balaram suspected, as it says, something was not right. At first he thought, well, maybe all the demigods are, they've come down. Each different demigod is coming down, and he's playing the part of a particular cowherd boy. So maybe that's the case. But he wasn't sure. And he didn't want to pursue the matter until just now. As I said, it's about 5 days before a year is up since Lord Brahma has left in his moment. So, also he thought that, well, maybe all these calves, maybe that's Narada Muni, and he's manifesting, replicating or expanding himself, and he's become many of these lovable calves. So he wasn't exactly sure, but a point came just before when there were some cows on the top of a hill, and they saw their calves down below being taken care of by the cowherd boys. So as soon as those cows saw these calves, their hearts became so overwhelmed with affection and such love that they had to go and see them and lick their heads and lick their bodies. So even though it was a steep hill, they went straight down, and the cowherd men said, "Hey, what are you doing? Stop, stop!" But they wouldn't stop, and they went down there. They went to the calves, approached those little calves, and now those calves were a little grown. They didn't need milk at this point. They were eating grass. Nonetheless, the cows wanted them to take the milk from them, from the udders. So they got close to them, and the calves, they took the milk. And the cows were delighted, because that is their pleasure. Actually, they were receiving the pleasure from Krishna. It was Krishna in these calves who was taking the milk, sucking the milk from them. And the cows were delighted, and the calves were delighted. And when the cowherd men came down, they were practically screaming, "Why have you done this? Where do you go? Get over here!" You know, because their authority had been not obeyed. But when the cowherd men got down there and they saw their children, a transformation came over them. At first they were angry. At first they were surly. They wanted to scream and shout chastise the cows, but they didn't, and they couldn't, because something inside them felt an overpowering sense of affection for the boys. So as they looked at their children, they immediately wanted to hug them, and they did do that. So they hugged them, they kissed them, smelled their heads. They looked at them. "Are you okay? Is everything fine?" Everything changed completely from harshness to quietness, serenity, peacefulness. So everything changed, and that's because when they saw their sons, they were feeling, experiencing that intensity of love that Krishna radiates. So therefore, he took away all their anger that they had, and then everything was smooth, and they went back up with the cows, and that was the end of that. So this was the period, this was the scene in which Balaram was watching all this, and it aroused his curiosity again, more so this time than perhaps at any other time, because he was a first-hand close witness of this. And so he asked Krishna, "What is going on here? First I thought it was the demigods, I thought Narada Muni. What is the... Who is doing all this? Is it you?" He suspected now. "Is it you?" So Krishna says, "Yes, it is me. All these calves, I am those calves. All these boys, I am those boys. I have manifested myself in all these things." But why? What did you have to do that? Remember, Balaram has gone through almost a whole year without knowing it, but now he wants it explained. He wants to understand it. So, of course, Krishna explained the whole lila that has been going on, where Lord Brahma stole the calves and he stole the boys and he put them in a cave and he put them under a spell, and they're in a trance and they're sleeping. So in order not to disturb or upset the mothers and fathers of the cowherd boys, who, if their children would not come back, and they would suspect that something was wrong. Maybe they got injured, maybe they got harmed, maybe they died. So Krishna did not want to upset or disturb or shake any of them. So what he did is he transformed himself into all the different cows and boys. And Balaram understood it, and that was the end of that. So now, the question comes in this regard. The understanding of what this pastime is really about. Sometimes people think that Lord Brahma, he's had a fall down, and therefore he fell into Maya, and therefore he began to question Mahamaya. That he had a fall down and he became under the mode of passion, and then he began to compare his mystic power with Krishna's mystic power, and so forth and so on. However, this is not the way it works. When Krishna killed Agasura, Brahma and all the other demigods were watching this. It was at this time that Krishna draped his, if you will, yoga maya around Lord Brahma. And he had to do this for various purposes. Yoga maya is the illusory potency given by Krishna in order to achieve certain purposes. And in other words, what he does is he has his great devotees, he puts them in a spell so that they will act in a certain way which will enable Krishna to accomplish a certain purpose. For example, we've all read Jai and Vijay. They were doorkeepers of the Vaikuntha planets. The four Kumaras came to visit them. The four Kumaras were put under Yogamaya. When they came up, they went through the first gate, the second, the third. All the gatekeepers allowed them to go through. There was no problem. But when they came to the seventh gate, Jai and Vijay, they wouldn't let them through. So the Kumaras were a little outraged. Why aren't you letting us through? Everybody else let us through. We're known. They are incarnations of Gyan. And they're not small timers. They're known all over the universe. So they're looking at these. They're only like little 5-year-old boys, for those who don't know. And they're naked also. So they're a little cute. They're very innocent. They're very lovable. So why would you want to bar little children like that, four beautiful children, from coming into Vaikuntha environs? So they get angry. They say, you obviously are you're imposters. You don't belong here as gatekeepers. You don't know who we are. Well, for that you should be cursed. You belong in the material world. Well, we'll put you in the material world. And that's what they do. They curse them. So the two gatekeepers, they lower their heads, they put their palms together, and who comes out at that time but Lord Vishnu? Well, he comes out and the situation is explained to him, and then when he hears and sees what is going on, he says, please do not worry. He tells the gatekeepers, this is all an arrangement by myself. And then the four Kumaras, they hear that this is an arrangement by Lord Vishnu. In other words, they're really not imposters, they're real gatekeepers. They belong in this planet, and we cursed an innocent person. So they began to feel very guilty, very upset, and very disturbed. Vishnu said, please do not worry about this. It is my arrangement. I want to send them down to the material world so that I can enact certain pastimes. Some of those pastimes have to do with wrestling, and sometimes the Lord needs a good workout, and he uses his devotees to have that workout in which he can wrestle. Actually, it's a great privilege. It's a great blessing to be able to spar or to wrestle, to hug the Supreme Lord. What can be greater? What can be higher or better? Nothing. So, therefore, Jai and Vijay would get a chance and it would be three generations. Actually, they'd have the opportunity to choose between. They would stay in the material world for seven generations as friends of the Lord, or three as enemies. So they chose three because they wanted to get back to Vaikuntha as soon as possible. Anyway, they come back, they go, and they are born in the material world as Hiranyaksha and Hiranyakashipu. It's the first birth. The second birth is Ravan and Kumbhakarna. And the third birth is Shishupal and Dantavakra. Yeah, so this is an example of how Yogamaya is working to facilitate a plan or plans that Krishna has. We have another example of Yogamaya working, because we have to not take these things as they are, as if that's, in other words, we see them from the surface, but there's something deeper and underneath it that needs to be understood, that they are enacting a plan that Krishna or Lord Vishnu has in mind. So again, we have King Pariksit. He was in the forest, and he was very hungry and he was very thirsty. He gets off his chariot and he sees a hut. Little hut is occupied by Samika Rishi, who's in there in deep meditation. So at this point, now normally King Pariksit is peaceful, he's calm, he's self-controlled, he's tolerant, he's patient, he's understanding, he has all the good virtues. And he comes up, he steps up into the kutir, or the little hut, and he says, I'm thirsty and I'm hungry. Oh sage, give me something. Now, this is not his normal way of speaking. He's peaceful, he's calm. His normal way of speaking would be, he would come up and he would look around, he would see the sage, he's in meditation, he would get a little closer, he would see he's in samadhi. I'm not going to bother him now. So he would just walk out. But if that happened that way, then we wouldn't have had the pastime that ensues from this. So in this Yogamaya, where he's acting angry, he's normally not angry. It's okay for devotees to be angry, but over proper and useful things, not because you're a little hungry, a little thirsty, and the Muni is not attending to you. So he says, I want some water. He says, don't you understand? I'm your protector. It's by my grace that you're here to be able to do all this meditation. He's talking like that. It's a madness. And then he stomps out. He's angry. He walks down the steps, and as he reaches the grass, he sees on the grass a dead snake. That's what he deserves. He grabs the dead snake, goes back up into the kutir, stomps over to Shamika Muni, and he takes his snake and wraps it around his neck. There. And he walks out. Outside, there are some little boys seeing through the doorway that's going on. And they go, wow, the king has done that? Because no one has ever seen the king act in such a manner. So the king gets on his chariot. Now, here's the interesting. Yogamaya is, the curtain is dropped down at this point. As the king is riding back towards the palace, he says, why did I do that? What's going on? This is not my normal way. I should never have done that. This is his normal mentality. So under Yogamaya, we may do anything and everything. For example, as I said a little earlier, Jai and Vijay, when they become Hiranyaksha and Hiranyaksha, they become very angry, very brutal. That's not their normal condition in the spiritual world. They're normally very peaceful, very calm, and very controlled. But this is under Krishna's Maya. It is not Mahamaya. Mahamaya comes from the desire of an individual to want to simply have his own sense gratification. But Yogamaya acts under the position of Krishna to enable Krishna to have his gratification. So there are two different things. One is for me, the other is for Krishna. So therefore, King Pariksit, he returns to the kingdom, and he's very upset, very disturbed that he should do such a thing. So now here we have a similar situation with Lord Brahma. Krishna has to achieve or attain certain things. First of all, the cowherd men and the cowherd women have been pining and yearning and wanting to have Krishna as their son. They have so much love for him. They want Krishna as their son more. They love Krishna even more than their own sons. This does not mean that they don't love their sons. They do love their sons, and very much. But they love Krishna more because Krishna is the source of all love. And they feel that emanation. They feel that exudation. They feel that radiation of love, which gives them tremendous happiness and causes them to want to do more and more loving service to him. It's the happiness that one feels. And they're devotees, so when a devotee is in the company of Krishna, it's like being in the company of a love magnet. I think I used that analogy last time. If you have a little magnet and you put some iron filings nearby, they'll come to the magnet and they hit it, come and connect. And if you have a gigantic magnet, then what happens is the iron filings, even if they're far away, they will be drawn due to the power of the magnet. Whoosh, like that. Any of you have seen magnets and iron filings? That's what happens. So this is the nature of Krishna. It's the best analogy I could come up with. That Krishna is all attractive. And big, big magnets are very attractive. So therefore, all of the residents of Vrindavan, they all were in their hearts were dreaming, thinking, wondering whether they could ever have Krishna as their son. Is that possible? Of course not. How could it be possible? Krishna is the son of Yashoda and Nanda, not our son. Yet they yearned for it, they wanted it. And Krishna fulfills the desires of his devotees. And that's exactly what he had to do. He had to fulfill the desire of all of them. And in order to do that, the best way would be is to get rid of the cowherd boys, get them someplace else. And also the cows, they also wanted Krishna to be their calves. So we have to get rid of the calves which are there. So that's what happens. Lord Brahma is induced with this idea. It's not something that arose spontaneously in his own mind and he fell into mind. He was under Yogamaya, and in Yogamaya we must understand that in this case the mode of passion was evident with Brahma. How do we know that? Well, in the mode of passion, one of the things which is quite evident is the comparing oneself to others. I'm bigger than him. I'm better than him. I'm higher than him. I can do this greater than... There's this sense of comparing oneself, competing with others, wanting to prove to oneself that one is better. So Lord Brahma got this idea after he saw Krishna kill Agasura. Is Krishna's mystic power stronger, better, bigger, greater mode of passion than mine? And he was wondering about this. So he said, well, maybe I'll make a little test. And in the test, I'll see. I'll steal the boys, hide them someplace. I'll steal the calves, which would happen. The calves wandered off by Krishna's will. And Brahma, by Krishna's will, put them in a cave. And then when Krishna went looking for them, looking here and there, Brahma took the boys and put them in the cave and put them under a spell. So now the boys were under a spell and the calves were under a spell. And Krishna is looking as if he doesn't know what's going on. He's looking around. He goes up one hill, goes down another, goes into a cave. He's looking, looking. He goes into some bushes. He's looking. Brahma's looking. Yeah. Well, maybe he isn't my master. If he can find those calves and those boys, then that proves, yes, he is my master. But if he can't, well, then maybe he's not my master. Maybe my mystic power is more powerful than his mystic power. He's thinking like that. So let me go away for 1 year or one moment of my time, and then I'll come back and we'll see. If Krishna found them, then he's my master. If Krishna hasn't found them, then he isn't my master. This is the test. Now, this is highly offensive. When someone is your superior, when someone is greater, higher, for example, in a school, the teacher gives the student the test at the midterm or end-term examination. The students don't come in and present a test to the teacher and say, here, now take this test to see if you qualify for my teacher. They don't do that. That's not the way it works. You're the student, and you take the test, and as a result, you show respect, and you show proper reverence, whatever is needed, and then you take the test, and you hand it out. So Brahma was actually acting very offensively. But he wanted to see. So this is the Yogamaya potency. It is working here. So now Brahma comes back. He's going to, not at this part, but in a few pages, we will see that Brahma comes back and he will see all the cowherd boys, just as before. He comes back to the riverside and he sees them all playing, wandering, just as he had a year ago. And then he says, then Krishna must have found them, because they wouldn't be out here. They would be in the cave where I put them. But let me go up into the cave and just check it out. So he goes up to the cave and he sees cowherd boys there. And now he's confused. Wait a minute. I saw them there. Now I'm seeing them here. Was that my imagination? Let me go back there again and see. So he goes down to the riverside. He's there. Oh, wait a minute. They're there. I just saw them up here in the cave. Oh, let me go back up. They're there. So Brahma is very confused, and his own mystic power is really driving him crazy, although he was trying to see just the great extent of Krishna's mystic power. And Krishna is starting to really lay it on now. So Brahma is a bit confused at this particular point, and he doesn't know exactly what's really going on. He's terribly confused. And it's at this point that Krishna, in the form of all these cowherd boys, he turns himself into countless Lord Vishnus. And they're all there with their four arms. And not only that, but various elements, various mystic powers, various demigods, they're all there, and they begin chanting and dancing and clapping. And it's a big celebration, and Brahma is seeing all these Vishnus going on here, and all these demigods, and he even sees himself there, dancing and chanting. So he's totally confused. At this point, it looks like Brahma is on the verge of a mental collapse, that he needs a good spiritual psychiatrist. So Krishna sees what has happened, and he decides that it's time to, the word that's used in the text here, is to draw the curtain down of Yoga Maya, which means to bring Brahma to his normal consciousness. Now, Brahma, as we said, Brahma is a pure devotee of the Lord. He doesn't make these kinds of tests. He doesn't have to prove whether he's better than others. If we listen to the prayers which come in the next chapter, we see his submissiveness, his kindness, his sweetness, his love, his sacrificial nature, his devotional expressions, the way he speaks, the way he admires, the way he glorifies Krishna. This is the real Brahma. The Brahma that we've been seeing is the covered Brahma, covered with yoga maya. For the purposes of what? He had to get those cowherd boys, the real ones, original ones, out of the picture. And Brahma would be used for that, to fulfill the desires of the cowherd men and cowherd women of Vrindavan. That was the whole idea. So they would get a chance to have Krishna as their son for an entire year. Now, how wonderful this would be. So he had to get rid of those other cowherd boys. So after the year was up, what happened was that Krishna, as he pulls the yoga maya down, all the Vishnus disappear, and all that's left is Krishna. And Brahma's completely confused at this point. On the other hand, he realizes what he has done is very wrong. He feels very remorseful, very guilty for having tried to test his master's power. He sees that the master's power is far, far, far superior to his. In fact, the comparison is made in the text that Brahma's mystic power is very much like a little firefly or a glowworm next to the sun. If you take a glowworm or firefly and you put it out in the sunshine, it has no glow. It has no, you can't see it. But if you take it and put it at night, you can see it. So Brahma's mystic power is very much like the glowworm in the daytime. The gigantic, infinite sunshine, it covers, so the little light of Brahma was completely effaced or reduced in its importance or significance. So that's exactly what Brahma found out. He found out that really he was not what he had hoped or thought. And he came back to his own normal senses. And he began to pray to Krishna. He apologized to Krishna. He begged for the forgiveness of Krishna. He yearned for this. So, one point, all the cowherd men and cowherd women, they got their desire fulfilled. But another thing that was learned, that we learn, they got the first of all, they were able to get that fulfilled because they loved Krishna so intensely and so purely. Another thing that we learned is that if we become proud, if we become big, high, great, Brahma was, remember, he's the chief of the demigods. And it's very natural for anyone in a high position who's honored, who's glorified, who's looked up to, who's bowed down to, it's very easy, even if you know what humility is, it's very easy to lose even your little humility by beginning to believe that what you're receiving is real, that I am bigger, I am greater, I am higher, I am powerful. When that happens, that's the beginning of fall down. It's the beginning of fall down because then it's then when we begin to look at people as beneath us, lower than us, and we then begin to command them and order them, even people who should not be ordered and should not be commanded, but should be spoken to gently and respectfully. And that results in conflict. And when you begin to have conflict, who are you to talk to me like that? Who am I? You know who I am, and so forth. And it can escalate into a fight. And sometimes fights even escalate into death. People begin fighting over nothing. Every night on the news you see somebody that goes in with a revolver into a bar or into a school or on a sidewalk or where, and somebody is shooting somebody because of this hatred which is generated from anger, and the anger comes from pride. I think I'm great, but people are not recognizing my greatness. How dare them? Therefore, I don't feel my lordship. I will show them that I'm Lord. I will beat them. I will hit them. I will squash them. Then they will know who's who. So this is the unfortunate situation that we have. So we learn from this wonderful pastime. As Lord Brahma has learned, he became baffled by his own Maya. Trying to test the Lord, trying to be even better and bigger and higher than the Lord. And so in his attempt, what happened is that he became confused, and in becoming confused, he had to cut a sorry figure and apologize to the Lord, beg forgiveness, and he then utters the most beautiful prayers. That is the real Brahma. That's the true Brahma. The Brahma who was concealed or covered temporarily. And he speaks so beautifully, as we will see in the next chapter. So, therefore, what we can learn from this chapter, at least what I have learned from it, is that not that I should yearn or desire to have Krishna as my son, or that he should be my child. That's far beyond me. That's for people who are so advanced in spiritual love and light that I can't even conceive of that for myself. But the thing that I can do, and the thing we all can do, is try to improve and perfect our devotional love for Krishna by thinking of him more and more in the course of our performing of devotion. Expressing our love to the Lord while we perform our devotional service. Although we may not see Krishna in front of us, we know he's in our heart and we can communicate with him. This is for you, Lord. Please help me to do this job, this service better. I know it can be done better. And if you will help me, if you will aid me, if you will guide me, I know by your grace it will become better. And you will be more pleased. And if you're more pleased, I will be more pleased. And both of us will be more pleased. And as a result, your grace will be upon me. And that love which you have, that big gigantic magnet that you have, will gradually emit to me more and more of that love. So that maybe hopefully, someday, some life, some year in the future, I can maybe have a little of the kind of love that Mother Yashoda has, or Nanda Maharaj has, or any of the others in Vrindavan have for Krishna. If I can have even one fraction of that, and Lord Brahma's, he prays like that. He says, "Oh my Lord, I wish and I pray that you will let me be born as a clump of grass in this Vrindavan field. And so that all your gopis and gopas can walk over me. And I will get the vibration of the dust of their feet on me. And getting that dust, I will get their love. And maybe, just maybe, one day I will have the kind of love that they have. And I beg and pray to you that you enable me to have such love. Because I see these residents are so unusually, uncannily in love with you, and I cannot even conceive and consider how they have achieved that. So all I can do is beg you, pray to you, ask you, help me to develop more love so that I do not do these foolish things that I have tried to do, namely question your mystic power next to mine. I see that I am just like a little ant next to you. So thank you very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada ki, Srimad Bhagavatam ki. I think it's too late for the classes now. Questions, unless somebody has an important one that has to be read. No? Okay, thanks so much. Hare Krishna.